Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry sets up a board of four scintillating intelligences, and you provide the questions that make them scintillate or flop. You may submit from one to three questions with the correct answers. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, you receive a complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're celebrating here at the Waldorf Astoria Canada Dry's first birthday of the sponsorship of Information Please. And now, in honor of the occasion, I'd like to introduce the head man himself, Mr. Roy Moore, president of Canada Dry Ginger Ale Incorporated.
It is indeed fitting for business to practice the same niceties of life as are characteristic in the final relationships between people. The recognition and celebration of birthdays are expressions of friendliness and appreciation. And these are high qualities which serve to bind us in relation one to the other. Business could do nothing better than to cultivate a close and very real relationship with those whom it serves. By way of radio, we have sought to do this. This is the first birthday of Information, Please. With us, birthday time is the time to rejoice and be thankful. Be thankful for life and to express our gratitude to those who gave us life. And so tonight, Canada Dry rejoices as it looks upon its healthy child, Information Please, grown so great and strong in one short year. We are grateful for the discovery of the matchless Fadiman, Adams, Kieran, and Levant, whose amazing knowledge and wisdom have become a source of delight to all who have heard them. And we are grateful to Mr. Donald Golenthal, its creator, for his foresight and skill. We express our gratitude, too, for those many great American and Canadian celebrities who, as guest artists, have contributed so much to the entertainment of the millions of listeners, our friends, who appreciate the cultural character of the broadcast. Coming as they have at a time when the world seemed to have forgotten true human values, it has been a purpose of our program to test the memory of our people regarding the literary interpretation of the essentials of our democratic faith. It is also my happy privilege on this occasion to express Canada Dry's thanks to those countless numbers of people in the United States and Canada who have appreciated our efforts to provide them with wholesome and pure beverages for their enjoyment. Due to the acknowledgement of your hearty approval of Information, Please, we take pleasure in announcing that you may begin now to make your plans to stay at home every week at this time to keep a regular appointment with Canada Dry. We are having a great birthday celebration here at the Waldorf Astoria tonight. We wish that it were possible for each and every one of you to be with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. And all of us here mean that in all sorts of ways. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please, which is a completely spontaneous and unrehearsed program, offers tonight as its board of experts John Kieran, the sports authority with a capacious memory, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the famous Conning Tower in the New York Post, Oscar Levant, musical whiz and pianist, and as our very special guest of honor, the Postmaster of the United States and the past master of politics, the Honorable James Farley. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of Encyclopedia Britannica. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on. I'll start with a question which is directed to Mr. Farley and which is off the record. If you don't know the answer, Mr. Farley, you will not lose $10 for us, nor will anyone get 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. If you received a letter with the letters S-W-A-K on the back of it, Mr. Farley, what would it mean? S-W-A-K.
I never look at the back of letters.
You never did. Well, now, you must have received from Mr. John D.M. Hamilton a letter of that sort, perhaps, from time to time. Mr. Kieran?
Sealed with a kiss.
Sealed with a kiss, yes. And by the way, Mr. Farley, I promise you that tonight I shall make no jokes whatsoever about playing post office, which will be a great relief to you.
Thank you very much.
All right, here we go into the regular part of the program with a question coming from Mario D. Coolidge of Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan. Name four songs, they may be popular or classical, name four songs whose titles express the desire for a policy of neutrality in the United States. It's the most timely question.
Will I get in trouble?
Mr. Levant, I haven't the slightest doubt that you will if I give you any. Yes, Mr. Levant.
Smoke gets in your eyes.
Say, that's an awfully good one. Smoke gets in your eyes. That'll do. That's one. Mr. Adams.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
Good enough, Mr. Adams. That's two. Mr. Kieran.
Keep the home fires burning.
Keep the home fires burning is three. And we'd like to get one more song expressing our desire for a policy of neutrality. Mr. Levant again.
River, stay away from my door.
River.
You go your way, I'll go my way.
Oh, that'll do. How about another one, Mr. Kieran?
Home sweet home.
Home sweet home is all right. All alone, play in your own backyard. Or Mr. Levant's favorite, I can't give you anything but love. Very good on that. The next question, coming from Ruth Burney of Maui, Hawaii. I'm probably mispronouncing the name of that island. If the island is listening in, I beg its pardon. Identify the following fugitives of fact or fiction. You have to get two out of three on this. The first fugitive is a fugitive from a statue. A fugitive from a statue. It's not so easy.
What statue?
If I give you the name of the statue, Mr. Levant, you'll be able to give me the answer,
first initial.
I'm afraid. Mr. Adams?
Pygmalion.
No, I don't think quite.
That's a victim of a statue.
Yes, a victim, as Mr. Levant says. Hardly fugitive. Mr. Kieran, did you have an intuition? Well, the answer is Don Giovanni, or Don Juan. The statue of Doña Ana's father, whom Don Juan had murdered, pursues him. And don't you remember that when he refuses to repent, the statue watches as he's dragged by demons into a fiery pit. Perhaps that may come back to you now. One fugitive wrong. See if you can get the next two fugitives. This one's pretty easy. This is a fugitive of fiction. A fugitive from dogs. A fugitive from dogs. Miss Kieran had his hand up first.
The Baskerville.
Hadn't thought of that.
Well, you want Uncle Tom's cabin.
Yeah. Why won't you give it to me?
Well, I thought that was too easy. I'd give it a hard one.
It may be
always
easy for him. I had my hand up.
What were you going to say, Mr.
Uncle Tom's cabin.
Yes,
it's very
arises,
difficult.
Pursued by the bloodhounds. And Mr. Kieran is also a classical allusion.
Actaeon.
Actaeon, yes. Who was changed into a stag by Diana.
And torn to pieces.
That's right.
It was a bad day for him.
Terrible day for Actaeon. The next fugitive is a fugitive from a third baseman. Fugitive from a third baseman. Who was that? Mr. Kieran had his hand up first.
Eddie Collins.
He
was chased over the home plate by Heinie Zimmerman, third baseman of the New York Giants, in the World Series game of, you have to excuse me, it was either 1917 or 1918.
I hate to excuse you, Mr. Kieran.
Well, I was in France.
1917. What did you do, get this by television?
Mm-hmm. I was being supported by Uncle Sam. Good job.
Heine Zim go all the way home. And what's the origin of that error? Why should he have done it?
Between third and home, and Heine had the ball at third base, and he started chasing toward home. By the time he was halfway down, there was nobody at home to throw the ball to.
Where was the catcher?
He went out to read a good book.
Sounds like Lord Berg.
Two out of three, and we were required to get only two out of three. Mr. Farley, do you admire Mr. Kieran now by this time?
I always did admire him.
Yeah, well, now it's settled.
More so than ever.
It's a pretty bright crew. The next one from M.D. Rappaport of this city. Who were the vice presidents during the administrations of the following Republican presidents? We put that in just to make you feel bad, Mr. Farley. You know the Republicans, Mr. Farley? That other party?
I know a great deal about them.
All right. Now, tell me,
Maybe that was the wrong thing to say.
We are some of our best friends, the Republicans, listening into us this evening. Who were the vice presidents during the administrations of the following Republican presidents? Herbert Hoover, who was the vice president then? Mr. Levant.
General Dawes, a very fine composer.
Take it easy. Herbert
Curtis.
Hoover. Curtis. Yes.
Curtis.
Dawes is wrong.
I'm sorry.
Gosh.
Curtis.
Curtis is
there
right.
There was a big scandal about a dinner, but I won't go into it.
Don't go into it. William H. Taft. Who was vice president during the administration of William H. Taft? Mr. Adams.
James Schoolcraft Sherman.
Probably the only living man who knows James Sherman's middle name.
Of Syracuse.
Really?
Utica.
Big Bud. Was it Utica, Mr. Farley? Better be careful, Mr. Adams. It looks as if we had an expert who might discomfort you.
I was going pedantic there.
Theodore Roosevelt. Who was vice president during the administration of Theodore Roosevelt? Mr. Levant.
Douglas Fairbanks.
Fairbanks.
Charles Warren Fairbanks of Indiana.
That's state right, Mr. Farley?
Correct.
Is Indiana the place where everybody knows how to grow up to be a president? Isn't
that both sides of the fence.
On both sides of the fence, right. Well, you corrected yourself on that first one, Mr. Levant, and I'm going to let you in under the wire on Curtis. That gives us 3 out of 3. The next question comes from Jay DuPont of Quebec, Canada. This is a musical question. The studio pianist is going to play the middle part of 3 familiar popular songs. And Mr. Levant is asked to pick up and finish the songs, and of course name them after he's done so. Let's have the first. Playing.
Do I have to play it in the same key?
Pick your own key. Right enough. What's the song?
Mother told me to be something I'd meet someday, somebody exactly like you.
Exactly like you, and that's quite right. Let's have the second one. Janice will play the middle part of another song.
Wonderful. The Funny Face by George and Ira Gershwin.
Good enough. Janice?
Change there, Joe. Play it, will you? That's Kern.
Levant, checking out.
The Way You Look Tonight by Kern.
That's right, thank you. 3 out of 3. From that piano. Now, the fifth question comes from William J. Thatcher of Milton, Massachusetts. This is a question about threats. T-H-R-E-A-T-S. What threats are associated with the following characters? The first is Gunga Din. We have to get 3 out of 4 on this. Mr. Levant.
He played a very bad trumpet.
Well, you're making up your own threat.
No, well, once he played the trumpet, well, they all win. The English win.
Because you haven't read the poem about Gunga. You've just seen the movie.
Why do I have to read it? I can see it in an hour.
Apparently. I don't think the trumpet plays much of a part in the poem by Kipling about Gunga Din.
I withdraw.
It's all right. You're doing all right for a man who goes to the movies. Mr. Kieran, did you have it?
No, I know the poem, but I don't remember any threat except where he's going to go after he dies.
No, that's not the poem, the threat. Here are the 3 or 4 lines. You put some Juldi in it, or I'll marrow you this minute if you don't fill up my helmet, Gunga Din. Julia's pep or quickness, something of the sort. One wrong. Now we have to get the next 3 right to get by on this. What threats associated with the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf. Mr. Adams.
He'd blow their house in.
Yeah, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in. That's right. Remember that, Mr. Levant? Maybe you didn't go. You don't go to.
Yeah, I can whistle it.
Sounds even more threatening that way, Mr. Levant. The water boy. What threats associated with the water boy? It's from a popular song, of course. rather spiritual. Mr. Adams.
They tell his mama.
Yes, I'm going to tell your mommy. That's right. Pretty good, Mr. Adams. And finally, what threats associated with Stonewall Jackson? Stonewall Jackson.
The shortstop or the general?
No, the general. The general. Does that let you out?
Yeah, let
Mr.
me out.
Mr. Kieran, our sports secretary.
Who touches the hair of yon gray head dies like a dog, March on, he said.
Nice.
Barbara Freakier.
Very good. 3 out of 4. And so far, we have lost exactly nothing, and we have lost no sets whatsoever of the Encyclopedia Britannica. So we're not sending out a present to anyone so far. Now we're going to have a present, nevertheless, for everyone listening to this program. An additional minute of information, please, because Mr. Cross is busy eating birthday cake and drinking Canada Dry. So we'll go right on with a question which, again, is off the record, if you don't mind. A Haverstraw, New York headline on a day in October 1907 read, Farley's double clears the bases. Farley's double clears the bases. Name the men who were on the bases. Mr. Farley, I understand you have what is generally considered a pretty good memory. They say that once you have shaken hands with a man, you remember him forever afterward.
Well, that isn't exactly true.
Well, of course not, but...
That's insincere, then.
As a matter of fact, it's over-exaggerated. You think it's over-exaggerated? Well, I do know you have a very good memory, and I wonder whether you remember that episode in October 1907.
Probably McGraw.
I was playing with the Grassy Point baseball team against the Haverstraw.
That's right. And you happen to remember who were on the bases?
Frankly, I don't.
Do you want me to tell you that story? It'll make you feel very good. Well, here's the story. In 1907, in October, there was a game between Haverstraw and Grassy Point. And Grassy Point was up. A man named Sheridan singled. Remember Sheridan?
There were two brothers, Mike and Pat.
Shouldn't be surprised if this is the other one. Oh, you do remember, Mr. Fowler. You've been kidding me all along.
But there were two brothers.
Yeah, one man named Peterson struck out. Then Kavanaugh singled.
He now works for the post office.
Pardon?
He now works for the post office.
Oh, well, you do know. I knew you'd been joshing me, and at that point, Farley doubled by gosh and saved the game. Remember that now, Mr. Farley?
Yes, I do.
Have you done anything as good as that ever since?
I wouldn't say that I have.
No, it's probably the high point of your career. The next question comes from Fred A. Lum of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. You gentlemen all smoke, I think. I'm going to ask you to quote from 3 poems about tobacco or smoking. Mr. Kieran, first.
A woman is only a woman, but a good cigar is a smoke. Rudyard Kipling.
I've never heard such conviction in your voice before, Mr. Kieran. That's one. Miss Adams, you had your hand up before.
Thou who, when fears attack, bidst them avaunt, and black care at the horseman's back, perching unseated. Sweet when the morn is gray, sweet when they've cleared away lunch, and at close of day possibly sweetest. Ode to Tobacco by C.S. Calvin.
Goodness gracious. That's wrong. Simply one. Mr. Levant.
Give me a man who can smoke a pipe, but not for long.
Mr. Kieran.
Light-winged smoke, Icarian flame, and the rest of it I don't remember, but that's the opening line of Henry David Thoreau's little verse on it.
I don't know that, but I'm positive it's correct. You have another one, Mr. Adams. You can't cap that previous quotation.
Where there's fire, there's smoke.
All right, good enough. One could mention perhaps one or two others. He called for his pipe and he called for his bowl.
He just said cigars that never...
How about a Cuban general's endorsement of a 5-cent cigar?
What was the endorsement?
Well, they have them in all the advertisements.
I know.
It's a rapper.
Yeah. I don't think it's yet a line of poetry.
No?
Not yet. It hasn't become a classic. The next question from Walter B. Warren of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Identify the well-known symphonies in which the audience hears these phrases played by the bass viol. And we've got a bass viol that was brought in on the back of Mr. Farley this evening. And we're going to have 3 phrases, different phrases played. You've got to identify the symphonies from which they come. Let's have the first. This sounds like deep scratching to me.
Doesn't sound like a flute so far.
No, I've got that far with you, I think.
Do it again, brother. The rhythm suggests Tchaikovsky, but that's all.
That's good enough. How about going a little further?
Well, I really specifically don't know.
You're all right on Tchaikovsky, Mr. Levant.
Well, you can't escape Tchaikovsky the last
12 years. How about giving us a guess?
Well, yes, there are 3 symphonies they always play. The 4th, 5th, 6th, I'll match it.
No. You must answer. You just give me one.
Wait a minute.
Don't number it. Give me the name.
Well, the theme of the sixth has a bass-like flavor. Yum bum bum. Maybe it's a derivative of that, of the sixth symphony. But I specifically don't know
what's the name. What's the name of the sixth symphony?
It Breaks Your Heart Again. The Path of Tea.
Yes, that's right. Took a long time to get it out of you, but that's absolutely right.
But I don't know if that's true.
The Path of Tea. Yeah. Very good. Let's have the next.
That one I can tell right away.
All right, Mr. Levant, let's have
it. It's the first movement after the introduction of the Brahms C minor symphony, number one.
Well, very good. And the third and last. Mr. Kieran, do you have to hand up, Mr. Kieran?
Oh,
that's
just
the eyebrows.
No, no.
That's the most famous bass passage in all symphonic literature. It's in the scherzo of the Fifth Symphony.
Of the Fifth Symphony of?
Beethoven.
Just for me.
Beethoven.
Of Beethoven. 3 out of 3. I don't see how you do it, Mr. Levant. The next question, coming from M. McLaughlin of Philadelphia, is about prize fight. What heavyweight prize fighter won the world championship by a knockout in 6 rounds? By a knockout in 6 rounds. Mr. Levant. Be careful.
Sharkey and Carnera. Yeah.
Sharkey and Carnera. That's right, isn't it, Mr. Kieran?
At Long Island.
Very good. And in 8 rounds. In 8 rounds. What heavyweight prize fighter won the championship by knockout in 8 rounds?
We had that one before, I
don't
think
so.
Yeah, that's
not with me. That's been some other master ceremonies. Mr. Kieran.
I think Joe Louis won in 8 rounds.
Sure he did.
Yeah, with Braddock in
Chicago. Yeah, 1937. And finally, in 11 rounds. What won the world championship by knockout in 11 rounds?
I may be wrong, but I think it's...
Do you have it, Mr. Farley?
Lewis and Pastor, isn't it?
No, I don't think.
That wasn't a championship
fight. It wasn't a championship fight. Mr. Levant.
I'm going to guess. I think it was Max Baron Carnera.
Very good guess.
I thought
absolutely
it was a 12th
right
round.
In 1934. 3 out of 3. The boys are better this evening than they ever have been before. The next question from D. Richards of Washington, D.C. is about postage stamps. A portrait of each of the following people is to appear on a forthcoming postage stamp. For what is each to be honored? What is each of these persons to be honored for? Now, the first is Gilbert Charles Stewart, 1755 to 1828. What did Gilbert Charles Stewart did? Mr. Farley, if you want to answer, it's all right with me. All right, he cedes to Mr. Kieran.
He was a famous portrait painter. He painted the portrait of Washington.
Yes.
That's been copied all over the country.
Yes, and a very, very famous portrait of George Washington. Now, another postage stamp shortly to appear is going to have on its face Ethelbert W. Nevin. Ethelbert W. Nevin. What's he going to be honored for, Mr. Adams?
Probably for Narcissus.
For what?
For writing Narcissus.
What is Narcissus?
That's very well known.
It's a perfume.
A composition by Ethelbert Nevin, a composer.
You're telling it all back to me. That's quite right. And is there any more famous composition he's known for, Mr. Levant?
The Rosary.
Yes, the Rosary, and Mighty Like a Rose, too, I think. Quite
well, that brings back bad memories. That's Harpo Marx again.
Mighty Like a Rose?
Yeah, forever.
Erase him from your mind, Mr. Kieran. And Mr. another Kieran. Postage stamp is shortly going to appear, which will bear the visage of Crawford W. Long. Crawford W. Long. For what would he be famous? Why do we honor him? Crawford W. Long. Have to get all on this, gentlemen. 1815 to 1878. Like to have a guess. Any guesses will be welcome.
Must have been a deserving Democrat.
he was a famous American. He's one of the...
Mr. Farley, did you were going to tell us anything about him?
He's a doctor, wasn't he?
Yes. I bet you've known these things all along and just won't tell me.
He was one of the doctors in Georgia, I think.
Yes, he was. What did he do? That's good enough. Do you remember what he was famous for?
He was the first one to use anesthesia?
Of course he was. That's exactly right, Mr. Farley. First one to use anesthesia. Mr. Farley, the only one to know that. Mr. Farley, who selects the faces that appear on the stamps? Might we know about that, or is it a government secret?
No, and this... Are you talking about this particular series?
Yes, or any series.
Well, the request... in this particular case, a request is... there was a great demand for what was known as the Great American Series.
Yes.
So we decided on a series of 35 stamps in 7 different groups. 5 different names in the 7 groups. 35. Well, that's approved by the Office of the Third Assistance, brought up to the for me for final approval. And to be very frank with you, the president always takes a great interest in it because he's been a very active stamp collector all his life, and his advice is always sought before we make a final decision.
Yes, well, that's very interesting. We're very grateful for that information. I think many Americans have wanted to know how these particular faces appeared on the stamps that were used. Thank you very much, Mr. Farley. Here's a question about politics. I'm going to ask you, or rather, Mr. M. Johnson of Los Angeles, California, is going to ask you to identify the dark horse who gained the presidential nomination in the convention at which the following were favorites. Now, in the case of the convention in which McAdoo and Palmer were favorites, what dark horse, Mr. Farley?
Why, John W. Davis.
Now, wait a minute. That was in 1920. McAdoo and Palmer.
Well, that was James M. Cox.
Yes, James M. Cox. That's quite right. In San Francisco. And now, in the case of Bryan and Hurt, they were the favorites at the convention, and who got the nomination in their party? Remember that? It's 19th, Mr. Farley.
Well, that was Judge Parker.
Judge Parker, Alden B. Parker. Very good memory, Mr. Farley, despite your modesty. Johnson, Loudon, and Wood were favorites, and who went Mr. Farley against?
Harding?
Harding, yes. What convention was
that? That was the Chicago Convention, 1920.
In 1920, yes. Let's see, we did get, with Alton B., I got two Democrats and one Republican on that question. Is that all right, Mr. Farley? We tried.
I think it's all right. That's a good percentage.
That's a good percentage. You keep it up. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make which I think I have never announced before. And that is that the experts this evening have answered every single question correctly with not a single misstep. I congratulate you all. And I congratulate myself on being able to put you through your paces so prettily. Very good. Now, Mr. Cross, if you'll wipe the crumbs from your mouth and take the floor, after which I'll tell you about next week's guest.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. There's a big white cake here in the grand ballroom of the Waldorf Astoria, and pretty soon we may hear everyone chiming in with happy birthday to you. During this first year of Canada Dry's sponsorship of Information Please, nearly everyone has remarked that it was a happy coincidence that these two sparkling companions got together. We sincerely hope that you will continue to find Information Please an enjoyable part of your radio entertainment. And we hope, too, that you will continue to express your pleasure by asking for Canada Dry sparkling water, ginger ale, and all of our other many fine beverages.
Canada Dry's thanks go to you, Mr. Farley, for coming down this evening and joining our birthday party. Now, next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will give us of their best, and a very good best it is. And as our two guest experts, we will have, by popular request, first, a repeat appearance by Mr. Mo Berg, who catches for the Boston Red Sox and swallows encyclopedias as a sideline. The second guest will be the American humorist, playwright, and screenwriter, J.P. McAvoy. To our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question. And if your question stumps the experts, you get another $10, plus a complete set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. So you can win this new prize in addition to $15. Send letters with questions and correct answers to Information Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Remember, Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water are on sale in convenient sizes at your favorite neighborhood stores. The large family size sells for only 15 cents. The medium size, 12 ounces, 3 for 25 cents. This is Milton Cross saying good night for Canada Dry. Until next week at this same time.